Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now it's time for your questions on parenting. Clinical child psychologist Dr. David Coleman is before me. Hello,
indeed.
You're very welcome.
Good morning, how are you?
And you can still send your questions in for David, 51551, email todaycb at rte.ie. Will we get straight into it?
Yeah, well, I'm just this new studio is gorgeous.
Oh yes, we're in our new home and you can check it out.
Do people notice that? They wouldn't know. Can they see us on telly now?
Yeah, they should be able to see us in our new studio. I'm glad you're impressed.
It's gorgeous.
It's fabulous.
Gorgeous.
But let's get down to the job that we're here to do. This one is from a parent who says, what can we do to help an 11-year-old who only wants to play if he's on the winning team? He won't compete at all if he feels the competition is too much. He has autism and has difficulty in school and in other social areas. He definitely suffers trying to fit in. Now, I know this parent says that this child has autism, but I'm willing to bet that that's a very common problem when children are coming into that age where they're getting an awareness around winning and losing.
I think it happens sooner, actually, the problems. And in fact, generally, by the time they hit kind of 11, 12, 13, certainly they have a concept of winning and losing. And they probably have experienced enough disappointments from losing that their hopefully parents or other people have helped them navigate that they're OK with it. But if you put an 8 or 9 or a 10 year old, and in this case, an 11 year old into the situation of competition, all they want to do is win. And they will be absolutely, I mean, you know, if you've ever played cards with a 7 or 8 year old, they cheat, you know, just all the time because they just want to win. And so that's part of, I suppose, the development process for most kids is learning to lose and experiencing that disappointment. My guess is, though, that if that young lad has ASD, that part of what's going on for him, though, is, you know, navigating the whole kind of social rules. And so he just needs a lot of emotional support. So lots and lots of empathy about the fact that he might lose and what that's like and how difficult that is for him. Rather than, you know, kind of, I suppose, letting him avoid situations where he might lose because he's not going to learn anything. Mm-hmm. And and it sounds like with every social interaction, he just needs an awful lot more emotional support. So that might help. But yeah, the competition stuff it's mad. Like, we just have to, you know, I often say as well, you know, when people talk about resilience and wanting their kids to become resilient, we can't help children become resilient until they've suffered a little bit. And so there are lots and lots of parents. I mean, this concept as well with kind of 7, 8, 9 year olds where everybody gets a medal, you know, I mean, it's kind of nice in one way, but it certainly doesn't give children that land of like, oh, but I didn't get what I really hoped to get. And so that's a process that a child needs to go through, and they don't need to be just abandoned to it. They need lots of reflective support from an adult who goes, yeah, oh, and you work so hard, and I think you'd really have loved to get a medal, and oh, I'd say it's really disappointing for you. Ah, you poor old thing. Goodness, I'd say though the next time now, because you'd be able to do a bit more practice, and I think you might do okay.
That's when they storm off and slam the door, David.
No, they're more likely to slam the door if we don't do that empathy bit first, if we don't acknowledge the hurt, if you like, or the disappointment, but if we just simply say, now, come on, you'll have another go now. Sure, you're only 10, you know, and you'll still be under 12 now for another 2 more years, and other people deserve a chance, and don't you worry now, and you're a great lad. That's when they'll storm off, because what you're not doing is acknowledging the hurt, that real, you know, cutting disappointment of not winning. Whereas if we acknowledge the hurt first, then we can offer the rationalization about there will be another time, this will pass, this hurt will pass, and you'll be okay at the other side of it. And that's what we all need if we're to become resilient. We need to feel the hurt, but not be overwhelmed by it, and then recognize that actually we can still keep
and
going.
And be able to move on from it. Okay, that's good advice. Our next one then.
You can storm off if you want to.
Yeah.
If you're not happy. Like.
Listen, I need you in my house sometimes. Now, this is going back down in age to a little boy. He's going to be 3 in a couple of months' time. Okay. He's a pleasant child, friendly and outgoing. However, recently his behaviour in the childminder's house has become very challenging and defiant, hitting other children, throwing toys, refusing to follow instructions. But we don't see this at home. Is there anything you would suggest to address this? That's interesting, isn't it? Not happening at home, but happening in the childminders.
Yeah. And so typically, if a child's behavior is consistent across every environment that they're in, then that's usually something intrinsic to the child. That's something kind of going wrong for that child. If a child's behavior is very different in one setting and completely, you know, the opposite in another, then that suggests there's something specific about that environment and the dynamic of whatever is going on there. So it may be that when he's in the childminders, if he's, I don't know if he's an only child or if there are other brothers and sisters at home, but just being in that kind of environment where there are other children whose needs also have to be met, he might find that particularly difficult to share the time and the attention from the carer in the childminders. Or it may be that he's just struggling with the whole concept of sharing toys, just wants everything his own way because that's maybe perhaps what he's used to at home. So who knows what it is that's going on, but there's something going on at the childminders, which is not to say that the childminder is not caring for him appropriately. I wouldn't suggest that for a moment, but it may be that
it's
possible. Yeah, it is possible. But I guess it's about something about his needs not being met in whatever way he needs his needs met. So it is worth certainly having a conversation with the childminder, because it may be that they're, so sometimes we talk about the idea of, in behavioral terms, the ABC, so the antecedent. So what's happening before he might strike out another child? What happens? How does he act when he's, you know, frustrated? And then what are the consequences? So what does the childminder do? What are the, if you like, punishments perhaps, or how is that resolved for the child? And so if you can explore some of that with the childminder and you get a picture maybe more of what's happening, not just that he's hitting out, but what's happening before it and what's happening after it, it may be that there are things that the childminder could change, or even that process, if the childminder is open to it, to discussing that with you, could allow the childminder to see, oh, actually, yeah, it may be this or it may be that, because it may be that he only really gets like that when he's hungry, for example, or it may be that he only really gets like that when he's very tired. And so even having those little insights can mean you can just adjust the environment a little bit and things might turn easier for him.
Okay. Now, a teenage daughter who is an excellent sports person, says mum, and after trials has made the panel of a regional team. However, since she has started, she's completely suffering from imposter syndrome. So she believes she doesn't deserve to be there. She's not as good as the rest. Other people should be there instead of her. Have you any thoughts, tips or resources on how to help her to get over those feelings? I think she's doing great. That's from mum, but she completely doubts herself. So this is a little bit strange because she's proven herself in that she's gotten through the trials and she's on the regional team, but now she believes she shouldn't be there.
Yeah, and I suppose what's really good is that she should be getting some external validation for that. So the coaches and the mentors or whoever's involved in that regional panel hopefully will be giving her the feedback that she's great and they're delighted and she deserves her place there. And if they're not, then that would be really helpful for her that she hears that from someone other than her mum or her dad or whoever texted in, because all kids will tell you, but my mom has to say that. It's almost like, they kind of dismiss it, even though our opinion is as valid as everybody else's.
No, it's not. No, well, I've learned that in recent years. You would say that. I get that from very small children. They're wise to it from a very early age, aren't they?
Well, most of the time, of course, as parents, we are completely, no matter what, the sun always shines from our children. So, except when it doesn't.
They're right then, is what you're saying.
Yeah. So I think what she probably needs is not to focus necessarily on just her sport, but to look a little bit broader at herself. Self-esteem and where else is she getting that sense of validation, and does she have a sense that she's really kind of, so there are two main elements to self-esteem. In fact, I'm putting up my Instagram reel I've recorded it on self-esteem.
Oh, well done you.
for today, so that'll be coming out later, but there's two key parts in my view. There's our sense of lovability, which is how likable are we, and so that's about things like, you know, feeling fully accepted for who we are, people kind of listening to us with real empathy so that we really have that sense of being attended to when we're speaking. And then our sense of capability. So hopefully she's getting a sense of capability through the feedback about her skill and talent as a sports person. And it may be that maybe she needs a little bit more in terms of her sense of likability, and maybe that's what's suffering. And so maybe even though she's making all these teams and so on, maybe she's struggling with some of her peer friendships and feeling a little bit on the edge and feeling like, oh, maybe there's something wrong with her. And so that kind of brings down the value then of her feeling good about her sport. And so then she starts to dismiss her sporting accomplishments as well. So, yeah, so focus a little bit more on her general self-esteem, try to build up her sense of lovability and build up her sense of capability.
Okay, and what's your Instagram handle so people can go and have a look at that?
Ooh, at davidcullman.ie.
All right, nice and easy to find. So you have a piece on self-esteem up there today.
Yeah, so I'm trying to do reels every single day. I mean, it's just exhausting, you know, but...
Because you have a real job and a real life.
But I'm really enjoying it because do you know what it is? It's a bit like coming in here. You have to try and fit everything into about a minute or a minute and a half. And it's really good exercise for the brain to try and get things succinct and hopefully, yeah, understandable for people.
Make sense, yes, and be understood. Now, I'm going to go to this one about a baby because this is interesting. And I'd say a lot of people have faced or are facing this problem. A seven-month-old baby who really wants me to be close to her for sleep at night. This is coming from a mum. So I end up bed sharing with her. Is there a responsive way to move her back into the cot without major upset for her? I don't really like the idea of sleep training. Thank you very much for your thoughts. Oh, that's tricky now because I remember that.
I'm laughing because I just, you know, I don't know how many times as our kids were in their kind of baby stages, into toddler stages, did we have exactly the discussion like, maybe now's the time to move them out of the bed. And of course,
you had them in the bed, didn't you?
Totally had them on the bed. Yeah. It's sequentially. So one of the biggest investments we made early on before we had many other pieces of furniture in our house was a big bed because we just recognized that actually, you know, my wife was breastfeeding and so it seemed quite natural and quite an easy thing to do. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of research out there, you know, so co-sleeping, which is not necessarily sharing a bed with your child, but even sharing a room with your child, is just really nice for children. Like they really, really like it. And so I could imagine a seven-month-old just loves being snuggled up close to their mom.
Is it safe though? Probably at 7 months it is. It's when they're
newborn.
Yeah,
I think there's research out there as well about the dangers of sudden infant death syndrome and stuff, which I think is the big one that people will worry about if they're sharing a bed, that, you know, a baby might get too hot or whatever, you know, or some people worry particularly if there's issues like alcohol in the family, you know, adults can be drunk in the bed and anyway, we don't need to go there. But for the majority of people in the majority of situations, co-sleeping is a really good thing for kids. They really like it. And so you could imagine that any attempt to kind of move them from that lovely warmth and security is going to get some kind of protest. And so with a seven-month-old, they're not going to be able to explain to you in any way other than by crying that they're upset about the situation. So while I certainly wouldn't in any way recommend something like crying it out or any of those horrendous strategies for just leaving kids to suffer, you will have to go through a little bit of pain with your child if you really want to move them out of the bed. And so, but you know, again, this is me maybe being cruel to parents, but think about whose needs are you meeting. You're meeting your needs in that situation, not necessarily your child's, because your child might actually want and like and need to be in the bed with you for their comfort and their security. And if it's not a great cost to you, as in if you can get a good night's sleep even with your baby in the bed, why move them? However, this parent absolutely wants them moved. Mm-hmm. And so if that's the case, then what you do is you bring them in, but you stay with them while they're settling in their cots. That might mean, in this case, a hand on their head or some physical touch for a period of time until they learn to settle in that way. And then you leave them once they're asleep. But what you'll find is they'll wake up and they'll expect to have a body there for comfort and warmth. And so you'll have to go back into them and you'll have to, again, offer them some physical comfort until they fall asleep. If it gets to the case that they're falling asleep relatively quickly, then you can, so they might do that for 6 or 7 nights in a row. Then you can move to being a little bit more distant from them. So being in the room with them, but not physically touching them. And then you let that settle. And if they're settled like that for about a week, then you move towards the door and then you do checking visits. So that's how you do. You kind of wean them off your physical presence.
And then
it's going to be a bit of a struggle for them.
Absolutely. And what happens is you get to night 5 and you're so exhausted that you go back to doing what you were doing before and you bring the baby into the bed.
Yeah. But you see, what'll happen then, if you think about the reinforcement principles of behavioral reinforcement, the baby has learned at that stage that they really had to protest a lot in order to get what they wanted, which was to be in the bed with you. And so ideally, if you're going to start the process, try and follow it through. It could take you a couple of months, but it'll be worth it if you really want your bed back.
Okay. I'm loath to go to another one because we've got very short amount of time, but I have a 6-year-old who won't get dressed himself in the morning. Should a 6-year-old be dressing himself in the morning?
So yes and no. I mean, if you want them to dress themselves because you think that's an important skill, great. If it's more efficient and pragmatic to just help them get dressed dressed, then help them get dressed. Why push it?
Yeah. And six is still very young, you know?
Yeah, they're kind of tiny. When once they get to older and you look back and you think, oh my God, 6-year-olds are just tiny.
Yeah, they are. They're cute. They are really in the context of humans. David, thank you so much. That's Dr. David Coleman. And David, as I always say, will be back with us in a couple of weeks. So if people have questions, get them into us now, 51551, or email the programme todaycb@rte.ie. And a reminder, you can listen back to this item and to all of our shows on the RTE Radio app. A reminder of that headline, that breaking news that came into us a little while ago. The Supreme Court ruled that a seizure of a computer from convicted murderer Patrick Quirk's home was unlawful. However, the court is to hear further arguments on the consequences of its decision and whether or not Mr. Quirk's conviction will stand. The court was giving judgment on an appeal by the Tipperary farmer against his conviction for the murder in 2011 of Bobby Ryan. Now, that's it for today. Thank you very much for listening to the programme. The programme was produced by the series producer, Alistair McConnell. Research by Ciarán Dunn. Our broadcast coordinator was Jarlath Holland. On sound was Ciarán Cullen. Just before we go, we got so many texts in on what we were discussing earlier with Edele Coffey and with Marty about whether gigs in the middle of the night or early in the morning were the way forward. Out early, home early, all the way. When you've small children, it's just not worth being wrecked the next day. And you agree with me on that, David Coleman?
I couldn't even imagine going out partying with small kids.
See, there you go. We're all on the same page here. Right, that's it. It's over to Louise Duffy.